On today's episode of Good Word, Marcus Moore Sr. joins us to discuss the KD trade rumors, the Giannis trade rumors, the mess that is the New York Knicks, the mess that is Daryl Morey, and how much does LeBron James have left? All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to the Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. Bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. Today, we are joined by Marcus Morris, senior NBA vet. You see him a lot of places, especially on ESPN with First Take. Get up, Marcus. Appreciate you joining me, man. Let's get right into it. Let's get right into it, man. You got these trade rumors with Giannis, or the perceived trade rumors with Giannis. Do you feel like he should actually want to leave Milwaukee this year, or do you feel like he should wait a little bit?
I mean, you know, to be honest, right, like, I feel like Giannis is one of those players that, you know, is not really, like, paying attention to the noise, right? Like, he cares about, you know, which direction his legacy goes, and he cares about, you know, the players that can help him get to that. So, for me, I think it's like the entertainment part, like at least entertain it and see, right, if it's something that you would like, if it's a change that you would like. I know, you know, it's a lot of outside noise, people just be saying certain things, and you know, as a player, I seen it because I've been through it, probably not at that level, obviously, but you know, it's been times where it's like everybody's speaking on your situation, so you kind of feel like you have to do some things, right? But for me, like, if I was a personal advice for him, I would say just at least just try it. See if it's something out there, you know, that fits you a little bit better. I think he gave Milwaukee some great years. Like, so either way, if he leave or he stay, I think he's stamped on, you know, in Milwaukee history of, like, what he's done for the organization. And I just think it's just one of those times where, like, players just want to know if it's something else that they would like. And, you know, and I think it's up to him to kind of see that. And not really think about what people like feel about his, you know, his decision and shit like that.
You know, it's funny. Like, we have all played like the trade machine thing with Giannis, where, oh, he'd be a great fit here, he'd be a great fit there. Marcus, my thing with him kind of is like twofold. But one is he just turned 30. You know, it's a lot of miles on his body because of the way that he plays. So you're wondering like the shelf life on it. But the second part is, I don't see a team that is a Giannis away, considering what you have to give up to get him. Like, he's going to cost a lot. Like, Milwaukee's going to bend you over the barrel, pretty much.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So my feeling is kind of, in a way, see what the landscape is. I agree with you on that one. But maybe if you wait a year and let a team maybe operate a little bit quietly, get their draft picks, get their house in order, and then you go there a year from now and see what happens. But I don't know if Giannis views himself as saying, I got that kind of time to wait.
Yeah. I was just about to say that, man. It's like, you know how many things can happen in a year, right? Like, you want it to kind of be perfect. You know, it's injuries, anything else. But I'm going to tell you this. It was very interesting to see that the Celtics was willing to listen to calls on Jaylen Brown and Derrick White. I'm gonna tell you that. And that was a little sneaky right there, right? Like, not in the sense of, like, you know, doing bad by the players, but I think that was a hint at the Giannis thing, because just think about Giannis in the Boston Celtics jersey and getting ready to gear up when Jason Tatum come back. Like, those are the conversations that I see happening. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because now that puts Milwaukee in a great spot. You get Jaylen Brown back at, what, 28? You get Derrick White back at, what, you know, 30 or whatever that may be. You kind of keep a good core intact, right, with another good player that's a superstar in his league, a max guy. Like, I didn't want to throw it out there, but, like, when I seen that, I was like, the only people that you could be trying to trade Jaylen Brown and Derrick White for, two core pieces of a championship team, and that can still, you know, that can still lead a team to a championship. I was very interested in here, and I was like, well, maybe. Like, if I'm Giannis, I'm definitely taking a step back and saying, hold on. Boston is a great spot. You know, they got a great coaching staff, a great upper management. So I think it's something that, you know, we should keep our eye on.
You know what's funny? Just period. whatever Boston is doing or what they're thinking about doing is interesting to me, because Jaylen Brown is your all-star. Derek White is arguably maybe your third best player, or at least your third most consistent player on that team. And if they're looking at next year saying, okay, we're not going to get anything from Jason Tatum, we can't expect anything from Jason Tatum. If he comes back in March or April, cool. But the fact that they're listening, I think that says a lot. I don't know if they're going star hunting, or I don't know if they're trying to cut salary. Like, that is beyond intriguing to me, because we thought the Celtics, Marcus, had this long runway, right? We thought they had three or four years of this core and that coach. And now with that one injury, it looks like everything is changing.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, man. But I don't see them trading those two guys unless you're getting a Giannis back, right? Unless you're getting some pieces back that can kind of keep your core intact. And, you know, obviously they still going to build around Jason Tatum, injury or no injury. And I think when he comes back, he's going to be something we haven't seen yet. I mean, you know, he's already had a great career, but like, just imagine him coming back with a year off, mentally getting set, being able to work on his body. I just think that's interesting, man. Like, it's like, I've been there. I've been in Boston. I know how I work over there, man. And Brad Stevens is a guru. Man, it's something to kind of keep your eye on.
Now, I mean, you've been in Boston. Like, that wasn't on a rundown, but let's go to it there. We expected them to be here. We expected them to be in the NBA Finals. We expected them to, I don't know about you, I expected them to wax the Knicks in the second round. Yeah. I did not expect a loss, let alone a decisive six-game loss. Do you think that they need major, let's just put the Tatum thing to the side. Yeah. Do you think that they need major changes anyway? Like, with Al Horford being old and Jrue Holiday being old and Porzingis being injured, and we still don't know what the hell was wrong with him. Do we think that they needed changes anyway? Was that like a one-year sort of, man, everything came together, but that's not sustainable?
I don't think you need major changes. I'm going to be candid, because I'm on his media side. Porzingis is not a Celtic. Like, Porzingis doesn't embody what they need from him. And that's not no knock to him. I know he has injuries, but I think you definitely dangle him and see what you can get. But I don't think you can get that much, to be honest, the way his league is going. And it's more so like a salary dump and being able to pick up some other guys. Jrue Holiday, I feel like Jrue still has a ton of years left in him. Wherever Jrue goes, he's still going to be able to help a team. The things he brings to a team is unmatched, defensively, scoring, being able to guard, you know, multiple positions. So I'm a little skeptical about the trade and the Jrue thing, but I know they just kind of want to open up their books, right? Like, they got a lot of money on the books. And then Al Horford's been there forever. I don't think if Al goes anywhere, it's home. Like, I don't think he goes to another team. I think he stayed as a Celtic. I think that'd be the end of his career. Maybe he goes into the front office and help with things like that. But I mean, it's definitely interesting to see, like, you know, guys open other books. But then, free agency is not really that deep this year as well. So
right.
A lot of that shit has to be coming through trades, right, or stuff that they're hearing. But I don't think it's that simple to be able to get off Porzingis and guys like that. But I do think maybe, you know, if it's me personally, maybe you move Porzingis. Well, you for sure move Porzingis. You for sure see, you know, what Al Horford's going to do. But I mean, I know Jrue's got a lot on the books, but, you know, I'm a big fan of Jrue and the things that he can do. So, you know, I would personally kind of keep him, unless I'm getting somebody that can be like a glue, a do-it-all guy at an extremely high level like him.
No, it's funny. I'm a Jrue Holiday guy. Like, he's been the piece in Milwaukee. He's been the piece in Boston. You don't trade dudes who make winning plays. And it's funny that the way that you're talking about the salary cap mechanics of the NBA from the player side, is that difficult to understand when you're operating in your space? You got your money and your contract, and the team has its own sort of things that it wants to do. Is that hard to understand when, you know, let's say Stan Van Gundy brings you in there and says, okay, Marcus, I got to trade you. Like, you're making good money. I got to put you in part of the deal. Is that difficult for a player to sort of grasp, or do you immediately get it?
No, it's difficult to grasp, and it's crazy because I've been in these positions a ton of my career, right? Like, let's just say when I was in Boston, I was making $5 million a year, but I was the third leading scorer. So, like, I had to kind of, like, figure out, like, why am I not, you know what I mean, why am I not playing a certain amount of minutes or what's happening? And the way the money goes is, if you're not making that certain caliber of money, you don't really have too much of a say-so on where they actually put you at, right? They kind of rank you where your salary is, right? So fast forward, I go to the Clippers, I get my $64 million. I get traded to the Sixers this year. Last year, I get traded to the Sixers. I'm playing really well. I'm talking about shooting the ball. I was probably shooting 40-something percent from the floor, helping the team win. And Daryl Morey comes to me, he says, I like you a lot. You know what I'm saying? I like you a lot, which I thought was but he said, I like you a lot and you're doing really well. You're doing really well for the team, but you're making a ton of money. And, you know, it's one of those things where we have to move you. See, in this perspective, like, I didn't understand why, because you were trying to win and then you moved me for a guy you just was like trying to audition for. Now, and now if it's like to make the team better and you're making a lot of money and we can get a couple different pieces for you, as a player, you got to understand that, right? You still get your money. You know what I mean? They're probably going to do right by you and send you somewhere that you can actually play. But in some instances, like Daryl Morey, as he just, you know, he just send you around. And that's the part where you kind of never really, like, trust GMs and trust presidents, right? But then you go to somewhere like Boston, where I know Brad Stevens. I know how he is as a person. Like, he will break it down fully and let you know this is why. You know what I mean? We're going to help you facilitate somewhere that you want to be and things like that. So I think it's just a different perspective from the owners, from the GMs and the presidents. Like, you can have Daryl Morey, then you can have top of the top Brad Stevens. So it's like, it's two different. It's two pole.
You know, it's funny because I was going to ask you about Daryl just in the next block, but we here. You a Philly guy. Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're a Philly guy, and Philly fans have expected a lot from Daryl Morey since he got there, you know, because of what they had already. They had Embiid, they had a certain level of success, but they wanted to get to the next level. Has he failed them?
And you know what? It's twofold, right? Like, he hasn't failed them as far as getting names, right? Getting the buzz going. You know, as I would say, the Sixers with James Harden was a game away from getting to where they wanted to be at, right? Local or getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And that was a really good team. The knock I have on Daryl Morey is a consistency of a president, right? Like, keeping core together, like making sure guys get their money. It's not just like a circus. Like, when I say circus, like, you're bringing in different acts. Like, you're not even allowing, certain acts to actually gel, right? And a lot of people were like, oh, this guy, I hate Daryl Morey because he traded him. Listen, I made $100 million in my career. I'm not mad at Daryl Morey for trading me. I'm mad because that's my hometown and people don't understand what Philly sports does for the city. Like, I'm from the inner city. Like, when we have good basketball and good football, like, that brings the crime rate down. I know I'm stepping a little bit higher than what you might expect, but that brings the crime rate down. Like, that brings people together. And when you're just constantly flipping them out and constantly players being unhappy and you constantly lying to players. And I'm going to give you a quick story. Like, Pat Bev might not want me to tell her this is my guy, but I was right there. And Daryl Morey told Pat to his face that he's not going to trade him. Yes, he sent him somewhere good and, you know, he was able to, you know, play. But I was right there when he said, I'm not going to trade you, you're my guy. And then his ass out the next day or two or something like that. And I was like, bro, like, how's that, like, in this game, like, you got to have some type of respect for veterans, some type of respect for guys that lay it on the line like that, some type of respect for guys that the city's embracing. When we talk about Philadelphia, you need guys that fits the city. You can't just bring anybody in there and just expect them to be. You know what I mean? Like, it just don't work like that. Like, identify the guys that needs to be there. Identify the tough guys. Identify the team guys. Like, really try to make a good team instead of just, like, again, going back to the circus act. You bring in so many acts in that there's no real gel. There's no real continuity. When you talk about championship team, they get to this mountaintop, and then they go over and they go over, and then they accomplish what they're trying to do. You're never going to win bringing 10 guys in at a time. Then during the season, you ship the 5 guys. And you're like, that's not how hoop works. We had success in Houston doing it that way, but you never got to the mountaintop. You know what I mean? And then you switched out every year. Chris Paul, Westbrook. Like, it just, you know what I'm saying? It's just an ongoing trend. And Philadelphia is not one of those cities. like, it's not one of those cities where you could just bring anybody in there and expect to win. And that was the only part I had with him, is like, you had tough guys there. Like, the year I was there, you had guys that was embracing being there. The city loved them. Why not, like continue to keep that together and continue to build on that, right? You had your superstars. You had guys that was all bought in. It's just because I'm from Philly. Like, whatever he wants to do in these other cities, that doesn't bother me. But because I'm from the city of Philadelphia, inner city, so I know what basketball, being sports in general, doing well for the city. I know what it does for the inner city. So, you know, that was my part of, like, not understanding Daryl Morey. And he drafted me, right? Like, I got to, when I came to the league, he drafted me. This motherfucker put me in the G League. And I was a good player. It's just like it was like the circus act again, all over again, instead of just allowing people to give them chances and see if they can dwell. And, you know, I just, you know, for me, I'm just not a big fan of the circus.
No, I think Marcus, I grew up in Detroit. So there's a way it's supposed to look. Right.
Exactly.
And there's a way that the fans are going to embrace because it's familiar. And, oh, we've won this way. We're supposed to win a certain way. And when you are losing the other way, you're going to look at the GM, you're going to look at the coach, you're going to look at the owner and say, y'all don't understand us. Y'all don't understand how this is supposed to go. And I think Daryl sort of lacks, from afar, it seems like he lacks a personal touch to this, like a humanity to all of this. And I think that's the reason why he has failed at this.
Yeah, weird dude, man, like, very uncomfortable dude, but, like, you just don't know, like, if he's lying, if he's telling the truth. Like, he does little things that you just be like, I see right through the shit. Like, when I got there, he just was doing little stuff, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm on the block. Like, I know I'm about to get traded. This motherfucker come here to talk to me. He'll never talk to me. Like, what you talking to me about? How the weather is or some shit. Like, bro, I see right through that shit. Man, I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm gonna get my shit packed. My shit will stay packed by the door because I know you're gonna try some little cool shit. So, you know, just for me, like, I can care less what Daryl Morey do. I can care less what he do with any other city. But for my city, the city that I've been raised in, the people that I know, like, I'm not a big fan of that.
Marcus, I would guess players talk to each other. Like, whatever's going on in your franchise with the coach, with the GM, whatever, y'all on the hotline telling each other, hey, this dude ain't trustworthy. So
For sure.
You don't have to deal with him, but you're telling each other, hey, man, watch out for this dude. Like, players are going to, in my opinion, y'all going to look out for each other in that way, because who else is going to look out for you but you?
Exactly. But, Vince, what the thing about it is, too, like, you would think that players – or is that close and we'll talk about it, but when that money step in front of it, fuck it up. Hey, listen, that shit go out the window. I'll be like, hey, man, like, is it all about the money? Like, it goes out the window. So it's like, you can tell somebody all you want, but when they started to come and Daryl Morey put that check or whatever team put that check, like, I just feel like I disregard that. So, you know, you would think guys are a little bit more closer. You think it would be more of a brotherhood than it really is. And I'm just saying it. From, you know, just being in there and being around. And I was on 7 different teams, bro. I've been on teams with superstars. I've been on teams that ain't have no superstars. Like, it's not really that tight-knit as you would expect it to be.
Now, I would imagine, like, being the player that you've been, right? You've had a bunch of different roles. Like, you play with your brother. You play with other cities. What's your favorite place to play? Like, what is the franchise that you're like, you know what? If I was ever going to get into the front office, I would kick it like this. Or the team that's like, you know what? This team really embodied the city. I liked how the city got down. Like, you've been a lot of places. What was your favorite place to play outside of being home in Philly?
Yeah, Philly, that was in my heart. So, like, I'm just happy I was able to do that in my career. But two places I would say is my favorite place. I got to go number one. It has to be Boston, right? I found myself as a player in Boston to be able to get on the stage, right? Like, to be able to be on TV every night, to be able to be in front of a sold out stadium and having to win the fans over. Like, I embraced that type of shit. Because when I got there, it was like, question mark, like, what is he going to be here for? Like, what is this guy going to do? And then when I got there, I was able to become one of the fan favorites, like, on a team with so many people. I was a third leading scorer. I shot my highest I've ever did in my career. I was super efficient. You know, we went to the Eastern Conference Finals. It was a lot of things that happened, and I still get so much love from them. So they understand, like, a player like me. Like, I like to be in places where you understand, like, I'm no nonsense guy. A guy that's going to lay it on the line every night. A guy that's going to hit somebody on the ass. A guy that's going to step in front of whatever it is it may be, right? Be a leader. And places like Boston was the first place that I was actually be able to, like, I mean, obviously when I played in Detroit, right? But the platform was a little bit different. That's when I started recognizing the league, like, Detroit is a great place, but they don't have that same oomph as Boston, right? Like, not right now when, the Bad Boys and Chauncey and them was there, it was cracking, right? Like, when I was in Detroit, we got back to the playoffs for the first time since Chauncey and them was there. So it was cracking. I was like, yeah, I want to be here. But then Van Gundy go back 5 o'clock in the morning, call me, yo, you getting traded. And I'm like, how? Like, I just averaged 14. We just went to the playoffs. How am I getting traded? But he did me a solid, sent me to Boston. And then when he sent me to Boston, I realized, like, oh, it's levels in the league. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? That was like my trajectory in my career when I was like, okay, yeah, now if I play well here, I'm stable. Like, I don't have to go nowhere else. And then I was able to go to the car and play with the Knicks, right? Like, that was, for me, that was my turning point of my career. Like, I was averaging 20 points. I know we wasn't that good, but it's hard to average 20 points, especially in front of fan base like that, that you have to come in every night. Even if winning or losing, you got to be there. You got to be playing hard. They embraced me so much. And I was like, bro, I could stay here for the rest of my career because that's the type of grit I am. That's the type of grind I am. You can talk to me, you can curse me every night. I'm going to lace them up. You know what I'm saying? And when I got to New York and they accepted me so much, I only played a half a season there, and it felt like I was there for years and years and years. And that was the I was like, man, I love it here. Like, I would do anything to play here. And I wanted to actually stay in New York, right? Like, the Clipper thing happened. Like, when I was talking about the media, kind of like just pushed me to the Clippers. Like, but I honestly didn't want to go there. Like, I wanted to be in New York. I felt like a change was happening. I didn't know when. And then, like, as soon as I left, they got a couple picks for me. And that was when the change actually twisted and turned it, and I was like, damn, well, you know, I'm happy I was a part of that, right? And I still get so much love from the fan base. I wouldn't technically say from the Knicks front office, which, you know, we can get into that, and I could talk about that too, because it's going to be a time when I'm going to have to call them out. So it's just, you know, I love the Knicks in Boston, though.
No, look, man, it's different. It's different playing at Madison Square Garden in front of those fans when that building is popping. It's a little different when Boston's popping every night. Them fans are different. Like, Boston fans I've been there for games in November. I've been there for games in June. They're excited, period. You would think it's 20,000 people. It's 20,000 people that got money on the game. Like, that's just how intense they are. So when we come back with Marcus, we're going to talk about KD. We're going to talk about Russell Westbrook. And we're going to talk about the New York Knicks. Back on The Good Word here with Marcus Moore Sr. Marcus, you kind of teased it. You did my job for me, so I appreciate you. The Knicks don't have a coach. The Knicks don't have a plan. Like, whether that's Leon Rose, World Wide West, Jim Dolan, it looks like a worldwide mess right now. Like, what is the plan? Do you think they have a plan, or what's the plan? We're going to fire Tibbs and figure everything else out on the back end.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna start saying this, and this might not be, like, you know, politically correct. I was a fan of the firing of Tibbs, and that's not just me, like, saying they should, you know, have a plan, but I just didn't feel like he got the best out of his players, right? Like, I felt like earlier in the season I was saying is like, hey, man, you gotta trust the bench. You gotta trust these other guys, and not only, like, trust them to, like, put them in the game, but you expecting, like, to have the, you know, the team to have a lot of camaraderie, right? Like, when you're trying to win a championship, like, a lot of things goes into that. Like, not just playing five players and just being like, okay, let's get the most we can get out of them. Or playing six when you throw Mitchell Robinson. It's like, it's a team thing. You want your guys on the bench to be pushed. You want your guys, you know what I mean? And you've seen that with teams like Indiana, teams like OKC, they got deep benches. everybody's knowing their role, everybody's getting a chance to play, everybody's happy, like that keeps the camaraderie together. But then when you play five guys, no matter what you're saying, I've been on the bench. What you're saying is not happy. Like, the team is not going to be the happiest it can be when you're not even giving other people a chance to be success to help the team. When Mikal Bridges came out earlier in the season, he said, there's other guys on this team that can help. We don't need to play this many minutes. That right there should have showed you, like, they're not really feeling this. You feel what I'm saying? Like, because no players are going out talking about what the coach should be doing. Right. Like people don't know. They don't catch that type of stuff. Like, he's telling you right then and there, hey, we're not really feeling this. Like, this shouldn't be happening like that, right? And you got players looking at the other players like, damn, I can't get no minutes. Like, I can't help this team at all. And, like, when you get to those points in your career, I mean, in the season, that really hurts the team. Like, when everybody's not really collectively together, yeah, you won a couple series with just those five or those six, but then when you get to the nitty-gritty, when you go against a team that got 10 guys that's playing, you want the same thing on the other end, right? And I just felt like that has to go with either Tibbs just wanting to do it his way and not really, you know what I mean, listening to the players. And I felt like now with the way that the NBA is constructed with a lot of younger teams, you have to be a coach that listens to the guys. You have to be a coach that takes in what the players are saying so they don't have to go to the media and say shit like that, right? Like, that's the type of leadership that New York needs, that you can get the best out of them. And I go back to Boston when Boston, Brad Stevens went upstairs and they were searching for a head coach, right? And they went to go get Ime, right? Mm-hmm. Udoka. And that wasn't the popular hire. Like, nobody didn't know, like, what did they just go over there and get him for? But I understood, because he will hold the guys in the locker room accountable. He was a guy that can actually talk to the guys. And you can tell because the first year they went to the championship, right? Like, that wasn't just the players. That was the players buying into this guy that's coming in and changing the culture, changing the locker room up and getting more respect from the players, pushing them to be their best. And that's where I think that, because Tiz's been around so long, I don't know if he really even recognized how to do that. Right. Like, that's a thing that you could honestly see that from afar. Like, I don't know if he recognized how to do that. And I had some time. I spent some time in there this year, actually. You know, I was going to be with the Knicks. So, you know, I didn't plan on not playing this year. And I didn't even tell you that, but I was supposed to be with the Knicks this year. I had some other calls. I had some other teams. They called me from Left Street and it was like, hey, we want you here. We want you to be around. We want you to help the guys. We want you to be a leader. Like, you might not play, but we want you here. I get there. I talk to Tibbs, and I kind of get that feel, like, this old school, you're going to do it my way. You can't play because X, Y, and Z. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't know how that worked. But, yeah, you know, I'm happy to be with New York. I don't give a f- who's the coach. I don't give a f- who's in the front office. I'm a Knick, and I like the city, and I like, you know, what it brings. So I felt like I can help with that. Obviously, it the cat trade happened, which I knew was going to happen before it even happened. And I thought I was safe because that's what they told me. Like, it was like, mm-hmm. no matter what happens, you here. Don't even worry about it. You ain't going to play, you here. And then normal Leon Rose and Nick, they make a trade. They go back on their word. Now I'm stuck with my in my hand because I turned down other offers. Because I thought I was going to be a Knick, right? And, like, I just felt was just, like, for me, that was just, like, a slap in the face. I'm a 14-year veteran. I've been around this league. I got a lot of respect. You guys called me, asked me to come here. I didn't ask to come over there. I wasn't calling the Knicks and saying, like, let's get me over to the Knicks. I was trying to go somewhere else because I didn't think there was no interest. And then when it became interest, I pushed everything else I had to the side. And then they backdoored me. So I think the reason I'm getting to that, so since you backdoored me, you might as well let me be the coach. Now, because I can get more out of the players than what we're seeing, right? And I'm serious. Like, I can have a staff and be able to get more out of the players than what the old school coaches are having. But I don't think it's a circus, right? All the coaches that they reached out to are really good coaches. So I would have done the same thing. Like, it's the Knicks. We were in the Eastern Conference Finals. You're in the Mecca. Like, yes, it's pressure. And that's another thing. You got to identify who can take that pressure, right? Like, we don't want to have to bring somebody in here and then have to fire them next year, because then it looks like we really don't know what we're doing, right? So I don't think it's a circus, right? I think World Wide West, I've been on West for a long time, really good guy. Leon's been my agent. You know, he's a little shaky, but he's been my agent. And, you know, a couple of them guys on the team I've known for a while, I think they have a really good core. I just think you have to identify who fits the mold, and not just the city, but like the locker room. Who can get the most out of the guys where they respect, where they want to play for, right? Like, you can obviously see that there's some joy in the game when, you know what I mean, when you're getting coached by this certain guy, he can hold guys accountable. But what they're doing right now might look a little frantic, but it's the Knicks. It's New York. It's the media. Like, you want to go into the summer with all this cracking, you know what I'm saying? Keep people talking about the Knicks, but it looks like a circus because so many guys are turning the job down, right? They're like, no, mm-hmm. I don't want that pressure. I don't want this. But most of them guys are already stable where they're at, too. And I just feel like, you know, they're just doing their due diligence and see if they can have a conversation. It ain't like they're trying to hire him. They just want to interview him. So I think it's twofold. But you still got guys in the tuck like Mike Malone, right? Like Mike Malone's in New York, mm-hmm. from Queens. Like things like that. Like they still have guys that they can get, you know what I mean, on the back end or still interview where, you know, it could be a splash. But if they want a real splash, you already did me, dear. You might as well bring me as the coach and I'll turn that around for y'all.
Hey, look,
you see,
dog.
You see where I would love to see, right? You see you in a rock.
Yeah, I see it.
I got my Philly green and I got the Knicks on here.
You are the campaign speech you just delivered.
Yeah, a little bit of both. A little bit of both.
Would Philly be okay with you going to coach the New York Knicks?
Man, I don't know. As long as Daryl Morey in here, I just don't see nothing happening. Like, I don't see no championship coming to Philly while Daryl Morey. You know, when they get Daryl out of there, I can go coach to Philly because even the coaching staff ain't, you know, and I'm not talking about all of them, but they ain't that strong in Philly as well, right? Like, they basing everything around one player. They don't have a system. If that one player don't play, they look like shit. And that's the part with this league is, like, everything's based on one guy. Like, no, build a system. Like, build a system, mm-hmm. Build a program. So if he's not there, we can still plug some things and we can get some things done. That's how you build a team. Like, just in case if something happens, okay, I got this system and that's how we, you know, this is the direction we going to go in. And that's the only part about Philly. Like, the coaching is a little shaky and, you know how I feel about there.
Yeah. No. We got that. We go back and listen to segment one. Trust me. Yeah, we know how Marcus feels about Daryl. Back to the Knicks. You tell me if I'm wrong. I look at, and I'm not against you with what you said about Tibbs. Like, if the players are out on you, then you're done as a coach, no matter what the reason or what the success is. But when I look at Cat and I look at Jalen Brunson, can you win with those two guys being your two best players? With everybody's hunting Jalen and everybody's hunting Cat, can you win like that? And whether it's in the Eastern Conference or anywhere, I don't know if you can win with those two guys being your best players when we're looking at them saying, oh yeah, y'all the marks. We coming at you, Jalen. We coming at you, Cat. I don't know if you can win like that.
Bitch, I think they can, right? Like, I feel like they would have been in the finals if they didn't trick that first game off being up so many points and giving a chance to Indiana to come back like that. But the difference between Indiana and difference between the Knicks right now is toughness. Like, it's no toughness on the Knicks on the floor right now. Like, it's no fire. Like, yes, they're really good basketball players. Like, JB is, you know, one of the best scorers at his size that I've ever seen, being able to use his body and get to the paint and create shots. Cat, that's big man shooting big, which can be a gift and a curse at times, but I'm a big fan of Cat. But if I had to put my finger on it, it's like having a guy like a New Yorker or having a guy that's a tough guy that can bring more. Like, sometimes the coaches can't bring that out of you. Your teammates have to bring that out. Like, sometimes that's just the way it goes. Like, I was on the team with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Yeah, it's different dynamic, but these are two quiet guys, right? Like, I was the guy that was like, okay, I'm going to bring the fire out of these motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? This is why they love me. I'm the guy that's going to set the straight out, that's going to push them, that's going to do those type of things. I couldn't identify that on the Knicks this year. And I felt like they were really missing just that, like, guy that felt like he was from New York, right? Like, the guy that was like, I'm gonna get down or dirty. I'm gonna be the guy that lays somebody out. I'm gonna be the guy that fouls somebody. I'm gonna be the guy that do this or do that. I felt like they were missing that. And yes, I
that
think
was
you
Dante.
Can.
I felt like Dante was the dude that did that for them last year.
Chizzo?
Yeah.
Beaverton. That's no knock to him. Like, ain't nobody backing down from Dante DiVincenzo. Ain't nobody, like, he's not the cat that's to foul nobody. And they be like, oh, you know what I mean? They been to grip Dante DiVincenzo up and say, hey, little man, Like, you know, but good dude, good player. Like, no knock to that, right? Like, no knock to him.
Yeah,
talking about a real gangster out there. Like, you need that in New York. Like, that's just what it is. You know what I'm saying? And I felt like that team was really missing that in those key, intricate parts of just, like, having, like, a real leadership. Like, I even said on another podcast with KOC, like, yo, you might have to play Tuck, right? You might have to put Tuck out there. You might have to put Tuck, muck the game up, take a couple fouls, get that energy going in the guard like it's supposed to be, right? And I felt like that the Knicks didn't really identify that, and I was supposed to be that guy, and they kind of, like, pushed that to the side, like, we don't need that to win. And, you know, a couple things happened. They did get to Eastern Conference Finals, but then that caught up to them, and it always does.
Look, man, I thought they was going to get knocked down in the first round. I thought they was going to lose to Detroit in the first round. I thought they was going to lose to Boston in the second round. And I definitely knew they weren't getting to the NBA Finals, so it was going to catch up with them. It just happened to catch up with them after they maxed out, right?
Exactly.
I want to transition, because Kevin Durant is always in the news for whatever reason, whether he's on Twitter or the fact that he's in Phoenix and everybody's looking at, okay, where's KD going? When you look at the teams that are sort of in the mix, right? Whether it's the Spurs, the Rockets, the Knicks, you know, Miami, the Timberwolves. Do you see a team that you're like, okay, KD would be a great fit there because they have the infrastructure that can absorb a Kevin Durant and still win?
Yeah, I like two teams. I don't know, this is everybody we're talking about. I love the Timberwolves, right? Two reasons. Him and Ant-Man has a continuity that can be successful winning a championship. Ant-Man is getting to that mountaintop, not all the way to the chip, but he's getting there every year, right? So he knows what it takes. He knows the work ethic. Kevin Durant has won two. You kind of combine that together. You combine this super game, right? And then, like, a super veteran like that. Only thing I would say is I don't know the kind of, like, how the CBA works, or where, like, the how many pieces they would actually have to give up to get Kevin Durant. Like, I think they need to keep McGrimes. I think they need to keep a couple of those guys to kind of keep that intact, just in case KD, you know, he might sit out a couple of games. He'd be 38 next year. Like, he might kind of play 82 games. You know, I think he would if he can, but, like, let's just be, you know what I mean? Let's, like, play devil's advocate, right? So that's the only part. If they can keep some of them core dudes intact, I think that would be the best fit would be Minnesota. Then you go to the Knicks, right? Obviously, they would have to move on from, let's say, a Cat. Like, for me, Phoenix, Cat, Booker, they know each other. You know what I'm saying? That kind of gives them that 1-2 punch, that kind of like that Gasol Kobe look, right? Like, how that looked, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's a good match. And I feel like if Kevin Durant, depending on how many pieces that the Knicks would have to give up, I don't think much, because Cat makes a ton of money, right? So I think that in books wise, it kind of match up well. If you can keep that core over there and add Kevin Durant and take out a Cat, I think that will look amazing, right? Because now you still got you still got the Bridges, and you still got the Anobis. Like, you still got your defense intact. You still got a lot of forwards. I think just having the versatility of just forwards together would be, you know what I mean? Then Mitch Robinson can step back into his natural role as a starter and the defensive, you know what I mean, protecting the basket, protecting the rim. So for me, and the East is wide open now, since you don't know what's going to happen with Giannis.
Yes, it is.
JT's down for next year. You're going to have to run up against Indiana again, but now you run up against Indiana with a Durantula, right? Like, it's a whole different ball game now, right? Like, and I'm a big fan of KD. You know, whatever it is that he does with social media, we all got our right? Like, we all got our shit.
We all got,
you know what I mean? People always testing them. Only because people test them because of the shit that happened with the Golden State and the OKC shit. That never happens. We never even be having this conversation about them being, like, not too far from LeBron, right? Like, now, since that shit happened, they talk about LeBron and Steph, and it's KD kind of, like, not really. Before that, it was KD and LeBron, right? Like, it was LeBron and KD, right? Like, so when you bring all those different things up, you know, I just think that KD's a hooper. Like, you got to recognize what he's done in his career, you know what I mean? Obviously, having won as many chips as those guys, but you got to be in a perfect scenario, too, as far as systems, right? Like, he's been in Phoenix when they switched out the coach twice. Like, as a player, how can you build somewhere when they don't even know who they want to coach the team? Like, a lot of that goes in the play when they just think about it's just easy to win. Then you look at them in Brooklyn. They were an injury away and a big toe away from possibly winning the championship.
They done won the whole thing. They done won the whole thing. They done won the whole thing that year.
Kyrie get hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, like, that's a championship team. So we can't look at him like, well, he didn't win. You know how much got to go into winning? They would have had three chips if he don't tear his ACL down there with Toronto. Like, now we're having a different conversation. Like, I mean, it's Achilles when he was with Golden State. You know what I mean? Like, we're having different conversations. Yeah. So it's like, from a fan side, you don't really see it. Like, you just going on a noun. Like, today, then tomorrow, you feel some type of way because this is how media portrays him. This is how social media portrays him. But dude is like, he's done it the right way. He's done it how he wants to do it. And I can't do nothing but respect that. But as far as like accolades and what he's done to transcend the game and being 6'11", being able to dance, score it from three levels, like that's in stone. I don't give a f- what anybody say. That's in stone. Regardless if he's tweeting, texting, talking to fans, like you should be happy that some of the players like talk to y'all, because now it gives you like a little bit more feel. Damn, I was talking to KD, no matter if I was talking shit or not. And you get off it, right. That's an accomplishment for you. I was talking to KD and he responded. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it might be crazy at the time, but like, my hat's off to dude, man. 17 years being able to carry it at that level, only averaged under 21 year, man, averaging 25 for the last 15 years. Come on, man. We talking about that's like you never see. So for me, like, those two teams, I think, would be perfect. If I'm him, I go to it's between them. I don't see nothing else. They got the assets. They got the players. You know, Drew Randle's going to be due for a contract. They got a couple other pieces that can help Phoenix right now, because I know Phoenix don't want to start over. Like, you got Devin Booker. You still got to be building, but like, you're not starting over, right? And those are like teams that can give you win now pieces.
It's funny you talked about KD, because people was like, "Vinny, you're a KD apologist." I'm like, no, Kevin Durant's the greatest scorer we've ever seen in the NBA to be 7 feet tall with a handle, with wiggle, that can shoot from 30 feet. Like, we tend to forget, like, even before the Achilles, he was moving. Right. Like, he still got mobility and stuff now, but he had wiggle like a 6'5" dude. He could cross you up. It was just, the game was so easy. He didn't have to do all of that. I just think we, like you said, we forget, because of whether it's time or the nonsense or the rumors or whatever it is, we forget how great of a basketball player. Like, the dude was the best player on the best team for 3 years. Like, it was Stephen Curry's league, but that it was Stephen Curry's team, but it was Kevin Durant's league.
He's the best player. He was the best player. Like, Steph Curry's a really good player. Don't get me wrong. Like, when he came to Golden State, he was the best player on the team by far. Like, it was Kevin Durant, Golden State Warriors. You know what I'm saying?
You know, and who, like, I am.
Yeah. I'm David Ruffin. He's the Temptations, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, not to take anything from the Temps. I'm David Ruffin. Like, the Temps still going to be the Temps without me. I'm David. Like, I'm David Ruffin. I'm a Rolling Stone. Whatever I lay my eyes, my own. Like,
somebody work up that. Somebody put KD with the big afro in the David Ruffin glasses. I bet you KD would like that.
Yeah, Rabbi Lee, my hat's my own, man. I'm here for a good time, not a long time. You hear me? So it's like, hey, man, that's who you want to be. Like, it's just, the game has changed, bro. You don't have to stay in one spot to make your fans happy. Do what you want to do. Like, do what you want to do, because teams do what the they want to do. They don't want you there. They get you the fuck out. Every time. They don't want you there, you're gone. Like, if they don't think, like, it fits, you're gone. So why would not step back and be like, I'm going to do what I want to do, too. Like, if I want to go play here, I want to team up the guys and have a few years where we together, kicking it, whatever, trying to win, do so. Like, it's a new age, man. We can't keep comparing this to the older, you know what I mean, the older NBA. Like, it's a new NBA, and it's going to continue to keep transcending until where the players just have more control on what they want to do with their careers. And he was kind of like the first cat that's outside LeBron going to Miami. He was the first cat is to do the unpopular thing. But I was in that situation as well, where I was like, I wasn't a fan that he did that, right? But when I stepped back and I took out my own emotions, like, he wanted to go play a better brand of basketball. How can you knock him for wanting to play? Yes, it was against a team that just beat him. That's like, you know, getting jumped by somebody and going, join them. Yeah, we get that. Yeah, but this basketball, it's not the same thing. Like, nobody's losing
their
life.
This is my life. Yeah.
This ain't the streets, man. It's my life. This is how I want to do it. I don't give a f- if you feel like that or not. And that's been Kevin Durant's career. Like, you don't give a f- what you think about him, right? And that's the part where we need to stop looking down upon that and being like, okay, well, yeah. Maybe more people just take that approach and saying, f- what everybody else think. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Look, man, I was one of those people, and people can go look it up. I was behind KD going there because I'm like, look, he's in Oklahoma City, where he was at the time, playing Walmart, that style of basketball. And he looked over and said, oh, this is how they're kicking it here. I can play a better brand of basketball here and still be that dude and be the best defender and have the ball at the end of the games and everything else. Like, we tend to have revisionist history with that stuff with KD. They needed KD as much as KD needed them. When we come back, we're going to talk about Luka and LeBron on The Last Word. It's time for The Last Word here with Marcus Morris. Marcus, Luka, everybody looks at Luka Doncic's social media photos, and they're all of a sudden everybody becomes health experts. Look at his arms. There's no flab on his arms. He's skinny now. It's skinny Doncic now. It's not fat Doncic. Like, when you see Luka Doncic in person, he ain't never looked fat. It's just when he got on the jersey compared to everybody else. That's how he looks at it. But when you look at Luka, if he's in better shape and he's completely, like, healthy, do you see the Lakers as presently constituted with LeBron being older and them not necessarily having the right amount of bigs? Do you still see that team as a team that can contend in this type of Western Conference next year?
Oh, hell yeah. Like, Luka, let me tell you, that just from playing against Luka, like, he's never, no matter how much weight he loses or like, which I might say, skinny Luka, whatever, he's not going to play defense. Like, that's just not what it's going to happen. Like, he's not, that's just, that's not in everybody, right? Like, he might try a little bit more. Like, but are we really asking this dude to be a two-way player? Like, come on,
no,
man. Like,
no, he's not. No,
yeah, never. like, so people just like when you say, like, because he's scoring with weight, without weight, no matter how you do it. Like, he went to the championship last year looking the same exact way. So it's a dynamic of, again, of, like, what you see and, like, what to say. The Lakers is a big market. They always want to, like, drive, like, just media attention over Luka and the things he's doing. But actually, Luka, I think, is really – Luka is not going to lose weight during the season. I think it's during the season that's more important than actually – like, in the summertime, because in the summertime, you're on your regimen. You got your chef with you. You know, there's no stress. You're feeling good. You're at home. You want to shed weight so damn fast, it's not even going to be funny, right? Like, I think the challenge is more so, like, when you're getting to cities at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you hungry after the games and figuring out how to, like, keep his weight off. I think that's the biggest issue with Luka. It's, like, during the season, not in the offseason, because every offseason we're having the same conversation about him losing weight, looking skinny, right? And even with me as a player in the offseason, I look way better than I do during the season, which is crazy. But I'm getting my hours in. It's not no stress on my body. I can work out in the weight room as much during the regular season. All that's get cut down, right? Like, you're not at home. You're not sleeping in your own bed. Inflammation is a real thing.
Right.
And when you talk about, like, people that knows their body and really works on their body, like, from an athlete standpoint, it's hard, right? But any team Luka and LeBron on has a chance. I think that is something that they need to do. If I was a GM, I would move. This might be unpopular, but I would move Austin Reeves. The thing that I've figured out in the playoffs is that him and Luka on the court together defensively is not great for them, right? Like, unless we're moving Austin Reeves to the bench, that starting unit during the regular season is cool. Nobody's, like, picking on them. Nobody's, like, you know, like, going that Austin Reeves. But in the 7-game series in the playoffs, if my scouting report, on my scouting report, I got red on both of them. You see him, kill him. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that I think that, and then not having a big to protect the rim, too cold, like, it's going to be harder to play, right? So I think that they move Austin Reeves because I know their stock is high. They might get a couple other, like, glue pieces to kind of help, in which it does the big or whatever it may be. And I think you go with that, right? LeBron is going to be LeBron. I think, you know, he's still doing LeBron at 40. So, like, I league is actually a lot easier. So it's not like it's getting harder and he's, like, dialing back. That's why he can play. Like, not even that good. Like, league is just, like, the talent is just not all there when you really, like, look through the grand scheme of things. And if I was saying, too, because I was talking about Jokic, I know this don't have nothing to do with the conversation. Jokic is a tremendous player. one of the best bigs that ever plays. Not top five, but he's one of the best bigs that ever played the game.
Absolutely.
If you look around the landscape of the league, there's no fucking centers that he goes against. Like, you've been playing small ball for the last 9 years. What centers do he has to go against? When he really had some real centers, and this was the first time we actually seen him struggle, is because OKC had two centers that can guard him, right? And it kind of gave him some trouble. When you look at the series against the Clippers, they had Zubat that was playing at a really high level, and it gave him some trouble, right? Like, it's just, and then once you cut that out, whatever centers he kills Gobert, other than that, there's no other centers in the NBA. So, again, that goes back to LeBron and being able to play at this level. No take from him, but he's watered down. He's not even giving him a problem now. If he had to play against that same competition he was playing against when he first came into the league in that first 10 years,
different. I don't know.
If he had to play against them for 20 years, he wouldn't have made it 20 years because them would have been, you know what I mean? It would have been real hoop, real putting your body on real fights, like real things that happened through the NBA, and they kind of watered that down. But let's go back to the Lakers. I think they are one or two pieces away, one or two veterans away, one or two, like, dogs away from actually getting to where they want to be at.
No, you're right. Look, I think it's different. The league is different. The physicality. You see, the regular season and the playoffs are two totally different leagues. It's like two different sports when they allow more physicality in it. But even the players who are being physical, we ain't talking about dudes who are the thugs. We ain't talking about Charles Oakley or nobody like that. They're just being allowed to be more physical. And back to LeBron, last thing. Do you think he has enough in the tank to be the best player or second best player on a team that really wins a championship? Like, we're going to year 23. Like, this is not natural this is not precedented. It's not natural. It's not supposed to be like this. But being that he's here and in supreme shape and everything else, can you count on LeBron to be able to carry you for 7 months or 8 months or 9 months all the way to June?
I think so. I mean, just the fact that, like, how much he treats his, like, the stuff he do for his body, like, how technology is just at a higher level where you can see certain things and read, you know, players, like, levels of, like, when it's in the rear, and that means, like, okay, like, he's beat down, he needs some days off. Like, you can read that now, and those type of things where he can save his body for certain times of the season. And then also having a guy like Luka Doncic, 25, 26, that can take on the load, right? And getting another guy that can help. I think he's still the second best player. He's still going to be the second best player, third best player on the championship team because he does so many different things. Like, we've seen him start playing the center this year, which he hasn't never done. He played the four, right? Like, he's been, like, moving him around. Obviously, it goes with schemes and being able to protect them and being able to, like, just move him around and different things like that. But you need a team. You need a full team of guys that you can put around him and give him that go, right? You need some veterans. You need some guys that can keep the game together because for him, like, I feel like this was the first time I really watched the Lakers not really have a lot of veterans, right? Like, a lot of guys that's, like, not his age, but, like, around his age. So, funny story, when my brother got there, he like, man, he's my youngest. Like, I know Brian Love having me here because he can't even say reasonable doubt in front of these motherfuckers. They don't even know what that is. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's a different dynamic, man. And, like, I'm all about, like, making sure that fits. Like, you got to have the camaraderie. You got a couple older vets. You got a couple younger players. Like, and if you look at teams like Indiana, they have that, right? Like, all them guys are, like, around the same age, but some of them a little bit older, but it still fits. And I think that the Lakers kind of missed that part, like the connection of Brian being what he's, how old he is, and then now you only got players that's in the 20s, no other players that's in their 30s, right? Like, that's a different combination, and I just feel like they just kind of, like, need to, like even it out a little bit more, right? But when it comes to LeBron and, like, things he's still able to do, when I watched him this year, he can even take another, he averaged 20-something points. He could dial back another step and still be the cream of the crop in the league. Like, I just feel like, to me, he can, the way the league's going and, like, the way he's learned how to use his body, the way he's shooting the ball a lot better than I've ever seen him, pull-ups from half court and all that type of shit. Like, he could do that for a couple more years and still be playing at a super high level.
No, you just wild. You wild. You said LeBron has nobody he can listen to reasonable doubt with. He can't pull up dead presidents, politics as usual. He can't do none of that with none of these dudes.
He like, don't even know what, you know what I'm saying? Then bro step in there, and then now you got somebody where you're feeling good that's, you know, not his age, but, you know, we get it. So I feel like, you know, for a guy like him, you got to definitely, like, even that out, you know. And, you know, God probably don't pay no attention. You know, fans, regular fans don't really notice that. But when you in locker rooms and shit like that, and we've been in a lot of
locker
rooms.
It means a lot.
It means a ton.
Man, Marcus, this was really fun, man. I really, really appreciate you, y'all.
Me too, man. Me too.
Marcus Morris Sr., y'all. He got on the Knicks hat. A Philly dude with a Knicks hat, but don't run up on him.
The Philly color, though. Make sure you see that green, that Eagle green in there. Now, not the Sixers, but that Eagle green stay in there. You hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My man Marcus Morris, thanks again for joining us. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back next week, I believe on Monday. I'll be in Oklahoma City. Y'all got to pray for me. For the next episode of Good Word, until then, everybody be safe.